Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Well, I looked outside and I have determined scientifically that the outside growing season and gardening season is pretty much over. So it's time to focus on the inside. Oh, man. Today on Garden Talk, we'll have some tips on how to keep your houseplants healthy and blooming with our guest, a nationally known gardening expert, Melinda Myers, back with us. She's a TV radio host, author, and columnist. Many years of horticulture experience. She's written over 20 gardening books. So always fun to have Melinda stop by, and certainly she is ready to answer your questions. What do you have about indoor plants? I have a few I can think of. You can join in the conversation. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Melinda, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Hey, always great to chat with you and your listeners. And I'm afraid my outdoor gardening season hopefully is not over because I have a few hundred bulbs to get in the ground. So everybody may be getting forced bulbs for Christmas. I don't know.
I forgot about the bulbs. Yeah, the ground isn't frozen. You can get those in the ground pretty much
until the ground freezes, and then
one of my former,
it makes it harder for those squirrels to get at them.
Oh, man. Well, you know, this time of the year, a lot of people are bringing home beautiful blooming plants, especially this time of year, and it's not long, often, before those blooms fade. They drop. The plant either dies or looks like it wishes it was dead, or maybe it never just blooms again. So what are some of the mistakes people make with their blooming plants?
Well, a couple of things. You know, today is a good reminder. We live in Wisconsin, and it's cold out there. And when you buy a plant from a reputable place, they will always wrap it up for you. And if you're buying it somewhere and they don't offer to wrap it, you need to ask because you need to protect it. And then don't be tempted to go, oh, I'm just going to run a few errands here and there and leave the plant in a cold car for too long. It will look fine initially, and then the next day the leaves kind of turn a gray-green and the flowers drop, and it's a mess. So get it home safely. It's going to be poinsettia season soon, believe it or not. And one of the things with poinsettias, when they're put in those sleeves, which is great to protect them, those, you know, paper sleeves,
yep,
those leaves bend up. And when they're bent up, they release ethylene, which is a ripening hormone. And so if you leave them in that sleeve going, oh, I'm going to go to my friends in 3 days and give them that plant, don't leave it in the sleeve. Pull it down. Let those leaves drop down until you need to rewrap it and take it to its next destination. And probably the biggest problem I see, and every time I go someplace during the holidays, I usually get pulled over to look at a sickly plant. And, yeah, it's a fun party game.
And, oh, man.
And usually what I do, the first thing I do is lift it up out of the foil wrap or the basket or the decorative container. And most of the time I find an inch of water in the base, and that plant's been sitting in that water. So watering thoroughly, waiting till, you know, that surface couple inches is kind of the consistency of a damp sponge, but then pour off the excess water, because what happens is you get a little extra, and eventually you have an inch in the bottom, and that leads to root rot, and that's when your plants start to decline. Now, I'm a lazy gardener. I like to call it low input, mm-hmm, but I like to put pebbles in the base of my foil or in my saucer. So when I do water thoroughly and the excess collects, that water sits in the pebbles, the plant sits on the pebbles, so I'm increasing the humidity. I don't have to pour off the excess, and the plant's not sitting in that water, so the plant benefits, and so do I. And so water is probably the biggest problem. Too frequently, and then letting the plant sit in the excess water. And then avoiding drafts of hot air from the, you know, if you have a hot air register, or drafts from the window. It's very cold next to our windows this time of year. Never close your plant between the window and your curtain, because it's a good, maybe 15 degrees colder there. So, yeah, those are probably the most common mistakes that I see, and if we correct those, we really increase our success.
What are some of your favorite indoor blooming plants?
You know, I love the cyclamen. I had worked at a poinsettia ranch back many years ago, and I love poinsettias, but it took me a while to embrace them, so I started looking for other plants. And I love the cyclamen. The flowers look like shooting stars. The leaves are variegated. I was lucky enough to go to a cyclamen grower out in California, and one of the cool things they did is they would take the cyclamen out of the soil, rinse off the soil, and then set that. It's a tuberous stem that it's a hypocotyl, I think, is the real botanical name. They'd set that in like a hyacinth forcing glass. You know how those glass, right?
Yeah.
Set it there. Keep water, so the roots were in the water, but that hypocotyl, that swollen part, was above. And it was really a great way to display it, and a little bit easier to manage the water because you just needed to keep the water up below that swollen base and the roots submerged. So just a different way to display it, maybe make care much easier. The other fun thing that's relatively new is the Christmas rose, not a true rose, but a hellebore. A little tricky to keep growing, but they're often finding them in florist and garden centers, and they're the ones that would bloom outside as soon as we get any thaw in our winter weather. But here they're usually a green to cream-colored flower, glossy leaves, just beautiful. They're not a true rose, so it's a hellebore. If you can keep it alive, then once the danger of frost has passed, you could move it outside. And if you're not successful keeping it alive that long, the compost pile is a good alternative, and it's okay. So it might be a fun one for people who want something different to try.
Yeah.
I'll confess, I've tried it once. Mine ended up in the compost pile after it struggled with the transition, so I'm trying again this year. So we'll see if I have better luck.
I've got to take a look at those. I haven't.
Yeah, I think you'd have fun with it, Larry.
Yeah, I'm going to look one of those up.
It's kind of a new trend and something different if you're looking for, and for a new challenge, too.
John in Glendale has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry. I wanted to ask Belinda, if it's possible to grow an indoor plant from an avocado seed.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people do it. You won't end up with a producing tree because by the time it reaches maturity, it'd be probably too big for your house. But I've talked to people who've had success growing them for more than a decade. And so basically when you have that seed, you've got a couple options. You either need to scarify it, take a little file and roughen it up, or some people will puncture it. You often see it with toothpicks, you know, three toothpicks rested in a glass with water on the bottom half, that rounded part with the pointed end of the seed up. Then once it roots, plant it in the ground. Or if you've soaked it overnight or roughened up the seed coat because it's hard, so you need to loosen it up or break through so it'll imbibe water, then you plant it in the ground and just leave that pointed portion up about the top third above ground. Keep the soil slightly moist. You'll get a plant growing, as much light as you can give it. You can put it out for the summer, back in for the winter. Really a lot of fun. I think those kitchen scrap gardens aren't just for kids. You know, your sweet potato that sprouted in the pantry, you know, plant it up, grow a sweet potato vine. You know, people are doing celery and onions and all kinds of things, so it's kind of giving a second life to those kitchen scraps. And at Thanksgiving and the holidays, if you've got anxious kids, keep a little potting mix, some containers, and as you're prepping your meal, there might be some kitchen scraps and get the kids started planting, and that's a good excuse for us older gardeners to do the same.
I like that. And John, I raised an avocado from a pit. I think I kept it about 3 years. It was pretty nice.
Wow.
It gave up the ghost after, I think, 3 years.
One of you did anyway, right?
Yeah. It might have been me. If it started to not look real attractive anymore.
And it's really hard because we don't have the sunlight. They're not hardy in this area. So summering outside, bringing indoors, I know you're good at that with limey. But, boy, it's challenging in Wisconsin to keep those plants going. But it's fun, John. It's worth the experience.
Yeah, it definitely is. And limey has lots of limes right now. Lots of them.
Excellent.
Well, you know, you mentioned lights. Let's go to Sarah in Zion, Illinois. She's got a light question.
Hey, Hey, Larry, great to talk to you. And I was wondering about limey, so I'm glad that you brought us up to date on limey. And I just brought in a bunch of herbs and flowers and a pepper plant, and I'm going to buy some grow lights because I really want these plants. And the lady at Ace Hardware told me that I could buy besides the grow light, she said I could get a black light and then another light to have a fuller spectrum. And I don't know if that's worth it or what it even means. And I also wonder if you can tell me, like, if I got maybe 2 4-foot grow lights, would that be comparable to, like, an air conditioner or less than an air conditioner, like, in terms of power? Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good questions. And I can't really give you the energy. I'll just be really upfront and honest. The good news is there are a lot of LED lights that are out and that have greatly reduced the price of the cost for leaving them on, a very much smaller amount of energy used. And the prices of those full spectrum, that's what you want to look at, a full spectrum LED light, the cost has really come down greatly.
Yeah.
And there's a couple things to look for. And you might want to just go online and do some investigating. I was at Gardner Supply this summer, and they're introducing some pretty amazing, intense LED lights. I think they'll be out in January. They may be out now. But they were growing full-size tomatoes under these lights that were 6 feet above ground. The tomato was a good 4 feet, no natural light. And it was flowering and producing fruit.
Wow.
Yeah. The other place to look is Modern Sprout, and they do some really, you know, if you're looking for some pretty LED lights, they've got one that's a pendant that you could hang down over a desk, or, you know, you have your plant, and they even have a setup where you can have a plant in a basket. They have some wall-mounted ones and some grow bars that you could put underneath a counter. And I guess and the LED lights are going to last you longer, so it's a bigger upfront investment, though the price is coming down, but the energy use is really much less. I really wish I had my friend Pete, the electrical engineer, because he could go, well, it takes this many kilowatts and that many kilowatts, but all I know is you'll spend a lot less energy, so you'll save energy, and in the long run, you'll save money, and you'll get the full spectrum LED lights is what you're looking for.
That's what I have.
Yeah, okay.
I use that for limey, and limey seems to like those full-spectrum LED lights.
And that gives you what you need for flowering, fruiting, and vegetative growth. When they first came out 15 years ago, the cost was unbelievable, right?
Yeah.
You weren't sure limey was worth the price, but now they're really affordable. So I would skip the black light, and I would start looking for those LED lights. You know, the hardware store, big box stores, even garden centers. A lot of garden centers carry those because they deal with plants. So you might want to check with your local garden center as well.
There you go, Sarah. Thanks so much for calling. Melinda Myers, our guest today. Always great to have her come by and talk with us about plants. This time we're talking more about indoor plants, but certainly ready to take your calls at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer, Jill Nadeau, our producer on the Ideas Network. Talking with Melinda Myers on this edition of Garden Talk. Always great to have her stop by and talk with us. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you so much for joining us. Melinda, by the way, Melinda, I love your website. Tell our listeners how to take a look at it.
Yeah, it's melindamyers.com. Not too creative, but at least hopefully you can find me there. And we try to help answer as many of your gardening questions as possible. So there are audio tips. So Melinda's Garden Moments, once they air on radio stations and TV stations across the country, then we post them on the website as well so that you can have a chance to look at them at your leisure. We have some frequently asked questions. We've changed it so they're not labeled that way, but as you look for information on plants, we have some profiles, answers to questions we've had. So if you're looking up Christmas cactus, why their buds are dropping, you should have several audio tips as well as questions I've answered. So we're trying to help make it easy to find attractive. There's a lot of information, so just hang in there, and if you can't find it, you can always email me, be patient with me, and I'll get to your question as soon as I can, and then that'll give us a chance to add some more content to the website.
Yeah, it's a great site for sure. Well, Joe and Ladysmith has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Joe.
Hello.
Hi, what can we do for you today?
Well, I've heard several times your listeners have had a question about planting something under a walnut tree, and I have more than 20 different colors of iris, and I've had them for about 15 years now under that walnut tree, and they're doing just fine. So if your listeners have a walnut tree, that's what you can use in your space there.
Iris, thanks, Joe. Have you tried that, Melinda?
Fortunately, I don't have black walnuts, so I'm lucky. But, Joe, you bring up a good point. There are lots of lists out there. Morton Arboretum, just south of us in Chicago, has a pretty extensive list. The Ohio State University, I think Purdue and Cornell, and most of it's the same kind of results that Joe has, is people have planted and had success, or people have planted and seen the plant struggle. So it's mostly observational. So, Joe, that's great. And what I always recommend to people, if you don't find it on the list of you can grow these or these are sensitive, try one, maybe two, see how they do, and start your own list, just like
Sure.
Joe did.
Yeah.
You know, because I think that's, you know, gardeners are used to learning as we go, and it's just a tough one to evaluate. So there's some information, but they can't cover all the plants. And so you might want to check that out. Northwind Perennials, which is in Burlington, Wisconsin, for those that like to travel, they have a really pretty garden under about a dozen black walnut trees. So it's, one, a good place to kind of go and see what they're having success with, as well as seeing how they're designing that garden under the black walnut tree. So I know gardeners, we all like to go travel and look at various garden centers around the country. So it's definitely, maybe not now, but next summer, worth the trip.
All right. Thanks again, Joe. Appreciate it. Let's go to Nancy in Grafton next. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Nancy.
Nancy, are you there?
Why don't you hear me?
Oh, yeah, we got you now, Nancy. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Oh, I wanted to know. I have a very nice poinsettia plant. I've had it out all summer, and I have it in a protected place, and it's covered. I'm going to bring it in, but what should I do with it now so I can get some color off of it?
So it's still outside?
Yeah, it's in a protected place, but I got it covered up with a quilt.
Okay.
So it's not frozen.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. You may be blooming it for Valentine's Day at this point. So usually starting October 1st is when we want to start giving it 14 hours of total darkness each night, preferably in a cooler spot, and then let the soil go just slightly drier. Back in the sunlight every day, 14 hours of dark each night. And it takes, usually starting October 1st, you'll start getting the bracts. Those are the colorful leaves we call the flowers often. Those will start coloring up. You'll start seeing those little knobby yellow growths. That's the true flower. You can stop the dark treatment. Anytime you miss a dark treatment, it delays bloom by a day. It's fun to do. It's challenging. And one of the things you want to do is make sure it's not getting any artificial light. There was a grower who was having trouble. They had a patch of their poinsettias that weren't coloring up, and they found out it was the soda machine lights at night that were shining on that, the heart of the bench, and that's why that portion of the bench wasn't turning color for Christmas.
My goodness.
I know. Just so you want to make sure it's total darkness. I remember my mom, when I was much younger, would take it down the basement. My brother was into photography, put it in his dark room at night, bring it back up in the day. And I've kind of decided that it's okay to just grow it as a green plant and put some silk poinsettia flowers in if I'm not successful. So, but it's fun to do, Nancy, and it sounds like you got a great plant. So get started now. The worst that happens, you'll have color for Valentine's Day.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you, Nancy, for calling. And John in Appleton. Hello. What's on your mind? John, are you there?
Oh, yes. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for calling.
Yes. My call is regards to keeping seeds from perennials and replanting them in the spring. Which ones need to be put in the freezer, that sort of thing? I've got calla lilies, rutabagias, purple coneflowers, coreopsises, just general flowers, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know what? This is a great question. So if you're saving seeds, one of the things I always do is say, look at where they would naturally grow. If they're hardy out here in the winter and they would be dropping their seeds, they probably need a chill or can tolerate a chill. And we're not talking freezer, we're talking refrigerator. If they're tropical seeds, they probably don't need that chill. Now, saving your seeds and putting them in the refrigerator, one of the benefits, it's consistently cold. And so when seed savers, they have refrigerated areas that they preserve seeds, so they have constant temperature. And so with your seeds, you can't go wrong, especially with perennials, saving them in a cool place. Put them in an airtight container. Make sure you label them. You might want to put them in an envelope just so they're dark in an airtight container in the refrigerator. Be sure to label them. You know, we always think we'll remember what color that was or where you put, right? And sometimes it doesn't work. Knowing hybrids don't always come true from seed, which is part of the fun of gardening. So if you're saving it, that purple coneflower may have a different shade of purple, or they usually come true from seed. But maybe if you have a hybrid, one of the orange varieties, it may be yellow. It may go back to the purple. So just that's part of the fun of gardening. So if it's something that's native to colder climates, storing it in the refrigerator is a great idea. Some benefit from being in moist sphagnum, but most of our perennials can be stored dry. So take them out of the pod, separate them, get rid of the chaff, any of the seed pod debris, store them in an envelope, airtight container, and label them. Your calla lilies could be saved in a cool basement, more like 50 degrees, because those are native to milder areas. You know, that would be an option for those, so the non-hardy ones. But most plants can tolerate the 42 degrees of your refrigerator, and then you're set. And then just remember to take them out and get them started early for earlier bloom in the garden, or plant them outside in the spring.
There you go, John. Thank you so much for calling. And let's go to BJ in Middleton next. BJ, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I grow a lot of peppers and mint in the summer, and I repot them back in pots and bring them inside. And I have south-facing blooms, and I have whole sunlight which comes in there. But I thought I heard Linda say that, you know, and well, what I do is I line up these pots by the window, and I think I heard Linda say that that's a bad idea because the temperature might be a little cooler by the window. Does that, you know, is that still a bad idea, although I have a south-facing and I'm receiving full sunlight?
You know, that's, you bring up a good question, BJ. So how close can you go? And one of the things is let your plants tell you. Peppers, you know, if it's drafty, my office in my home is west, and I have to sometimes move the plants back, even though I have a covered porch. I get lots of light, but it's really cold because of the west winds coming right across the farm fields. And so I have to move my plants back. Now, your window may not be as cold, so you just want to judge your plants. If the leaves are kind of droopy, you may need to move them back a foot from the window just to keep them from that really cold spot. So let your plants be the guide. My concern is you put your plants on the windowsill in the winter, it can be pretty chilly. So, you know, every house is a little different depending on, you know, a south side is going to give you the most sunlight for the winter. So let your, if you're having success, obviously it's not too cold at your south window for those plants. If they're not performing well, looking a little droopy, try moving them back just 6 to 12 inches and see if that improves their growth.
There you go, BJ. Thank you so much. Muriel from Spring Green emailed to say the leaves on her Christmas cactus are no longer dark green, but light green to yellow. She repotted it a few months ago, and the roots looked okay, and she's given it cactus fertilizer in a weak solution every other watering. It still blooms. She found one flower bud today, but it doesn't look very healthy, and yellow reminds me of too much water, but maybe, what do you think?
Exactly. And one of the problems when we repot plants, and I don't know if Muriel did this, so I'm not picking on you, Muriel. I'm just saying what I often see is we think, okay, I'm going to put it in a pot two, three, 4 inches bigger so I don't have to repot it for years. But really, we want to only go about one, no more than 2 inches larger in diameter, especially with cacti and succulents. They like to be pot-bound. So if you put it in a container much larger, what happens is there are no roots filling that soil to absorb the water. The soil stays wet longer. So even if you were watering once a week, like you always did, now there's more soil to hold the moisture. So those roots are exposed to wet soil for longer periods. And as Larry mentioned, it's too much water. So you may need to adjust your frequency because you've got more potting mix, maybe a little bit different potting mix. The other thing I would do is a lot of our potting mixes contain fertilizer. So check the label. So usually once you've repotted, you don't need to fertilize. I tend to be light on the fertilization. I find we tend to overdo. And one of the things when our plants aren't actively growing, they don't need as much fertilizer. When they're blooming, if we don't use the right fertilizer, we can cause blossom drop. So I would say you've just repotted it. Check your watering. I would stop fertilizing until you start seeing new improved growth because it can also be damage from your fertilizer on those roots that were exposed as you repotted it. So I think you're probably just holding too much moisture because of more soil, adjusting it. You obviously know how to take care of it, so just adjust because of the bigger pot, and I think you should see an improvement.
I had a Christmas cactus in my office for several years, and that thing bloomed like crazy, mostly because I paid no attention to it. I'd water it every once in a while when I thought of it, and that was about it.
Benign neglect, I think, is the key to success with most plants, as you mentioned. And Christmas cactus, like poinsettias, there's some debate, but usually you'll find if you let them go a little bit drier and cooler nights, that tends to stimulate bloom. A little bit drier, there's that benign neglect you gave them, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
And darkness. So if you're in an area in a room where it gets natural light, that will help nudge them along too. But, yes, you hit it right on the head with that. Don't be too nice to your plants. You can kill them with kindness.
Jennifer in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. I have a question about overwintering a Brugmansia tree. Shrub, I guess I should say. It's only about 3 feet tall, well branched. I went online, and every single site that I read had a different bit of advice about what to do. So I decided to bring it into the basement. It gets a little bit of light from a north-facing window, but very little light, and I was going to cut it back drastically. When we brought it in, all of the leaves fell off immediately. But I didn't get around to cutting it, and now 2 weeks later, that thing is covered in new leaves. So I hate to cut back the stems now that it is growing again. I'm not sure what to do with it.
Jennifer, you bring up a great point because it's kind of like reblooming amaryllis. Every gardener has a different take on how to make it happen. And you can do Brugmansias in two ways. You can grow them like a houseplant, and the fact that yours is rebloomed, you may want to get it closer to the window and grow it. And one of the things I like to do with that and hibiscus are grow them in a cool place with bright light, like a basement window, not south sunny window, water sparingly. So I'm keeping it alive. It's somewhat, it's not going to put on a lot of growth, but it's not going to die back. That's one option. The other option is a cool, dark location. Now I have a basement with no windows, and so I move my mandevillas and a lot of my plants down in this area surrounded three walls. It's where I keep my wine and my hibiscus, and they go dormant, my mandevilla, and they go totally dormant. And I just water maybe once a month or every two just so the roots don't totally dry out. Bring them out in the spring, and then they start growing. So a lot of the reason, Jennifer, you're seeing a lot of different recommendations is based on what your options are, what kind of space you have, what kind of care you want to give them, the time you have. It sounds like yours wants to keep growing, and I'm with you. I wouldn't cut it back because it's put a lot of energy into these leaves, and that's why I think getting it into the window, so even though you're going to just keep it maybe not flourishing but alive, it'll have a chance to put some of that energy back in.
Because if you cut all those leaves off, all that energy has been expended and not replaced. So if you have room, I'd throw it in front of a place it near a sunny window out of a draft and see if you can keep it going like a houseplant.
There you go, Jennifer. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Katie mailed that she dug up her dahlias at the start of October. She placed the dried and cleaned roots in peat moss in plastic buckets in her basement. And when she checked on them last week, she saw they had started sending out green shoots. She made sure they are protected from as much light as possible, but are they ruined? Can she still plant them next spring?
Boy, it's one of the problems with our basements is our basements tend to be too cool, or too warm, I'm sorry.
Too warm, yeah.
Exactly. And so when we're trying to save cannas, dahlias, calla lilies, often our basements are so warm that they start to grow. So one of the things you want to do is get them as far away from the furnace as possible. If you do have, I've seen some gardeners take even styrofoam coolers and cut out one side and place them like in the corner that has two outside walls and kind of create a little mini, you know, root cellar kind of setup, anything to try to trap that cool air around those. So for her, it's moving it to the coolest spot she can find and trying to keep them, potting them up and growing them over winter is an option, but probably not practical because I'm guessing she has quite a few. I have had success where mine have sprouted. I got them into a cooler, darker spot and stopped it, and there was enough stored energy. And since they're packed in peat moss, that's great. Check to make sure if any of them get soft and mushy, get those out. But as long as they're firm, she's still got a good shot that they'll make it for planting next spring. Don't give up.
Don't give up. Let's go to Ruth in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Ruth.
Hi. I watched a TV program where they do pot plants, and they used a fertilizer, and they didn't say what it was, but it was you put so much in and mix it with the dirt, and as it used up the fertilizer, it held the water in these beads, and I don't know what it could possibly be.
You know, I don't know what that brand is either. I'm glad you bring up a good point. So it might have been one of the slow-release fertilizers. There are several on the market that some are encapsulated in little plastic. Some are covered with sulfur so that as the sulfur covering breaks down, the fertilizer is released over time. This sounds like it might have had one of the polymers that it absorbs water. You often see those in the mall, not as much as you used to, and they add color, and they just have plant cuttings stuck in there, and you can grow them in that. And the idea is they absorb the moisture, and they're supposed to hold them near the plants. The problem is that the research doesn't show that they really work. You know, you often see them advertised for containers, so you have to water less, or house plants, mix it into your potting mix. Some potting mixes even include things. Parasorb is one of the names, and it's like a little crystal, but when it gets wet, it looks like tapioca pudding. That's kind of relates to food for me. And some people swear by them, and if they work for you, great. Don't overdo. More is not better, because then you'll have a slimy mess for sure. But before you invest a lot of money, make sure it fits in with your gardening style, because the research doesn't really show that those really work. They're impressive to look at, but not really effective on helping reduce your watering. So I'm guessing it was probably some combination of fertilizer with one of these that they somehow encapsulated or combined the two. So I'm sorry, I don't know the brand name, but also just beware that it may not do all the things they're claiming.
There you go, Ruth. Thank you so much for calling. Well, Steve wonders how far LED lights should be placed from the top of the plants.
You know, in general, with tropical plants, you can keep them 6 to 12 inches above the plant. When we're doing seedlings, we usually keep them a little closer, like 4 to 6 inches from the top. And always check the directions. But one of the things to keep in mind is that your plant can tell you. So if the growth is really deep green and more compact than it should be, raise the lights. If it's stretching towards the light, you need to lower the lights. They're doing a lot of research on lights. There's a lot of interest in growing greens in large warehouses. They're even doing strawberries. Some work in Europe has shown, you know, 20-pound harvest per, I forget how many square feet. So there's some pretty amazing things happening with growing food crops as well. And one of the things they're trying to do is looking at how to get that light down inside tall plants. So often you'll see light bars that will hang down in bigger plants, or those you can attach to the side of the pot so that you can get even distribution. The other thing is putting your plants on a white or reflective surface so some of that light bounces back up to the plant. Because the real challenge is if you're lighting from above and it's a tall plant and you have no natural lighting, it's really hard to get the light to the base. And so I think we're going to be seeing more and more on stick lights that attach to pots. As I mentioned, those lights that I saw at Gardener Supply were amazing because they were really penetrating deep into, you know, down a good 3 to 4 feet through that tomato plant. So it was really unbelievable. So I think we're going to see a lot of changes. So let your plant be your guide. Always check the label, but let your plant be the guide in how it's growing to how close you need to keep them to the top of the plant.
I've got Lamy's lights on a pole lamp.
Oh,
so it's so different, you know, so top, middle, and bottom kind of cover.
Perfect solution. You just are ahead of your time, Larry.
Well, let's find out if Jeanette in Weston is ahead of her time. Jeanette, what's on your mind?
I have an Alvera plant, and it got so large, it's got babies, and there's just a oodles of them. And I don't know how to transplant them.
Aloe vera plant with babies. What do you think, Melinda?
You're doing a good job of growing them, Jeanette.
Yeah.
So that's excellent. So this is a fun thing, and now we know what everyone is getting that's on Jeanette's Christmas list is a baby aloe vera. So carefully sliding it out of the container, and then you can see where those babies are coming off. Take a good sharp knife and slice through. And then you're just going to divide those up, put them in a pot just slightly larger than the roots, than the roots that remain. Put the parent plant or however many are left, whatever's left, repot that again in a pot slightly larger than the roots. And it's as easy as that. It's a great way to start new plants. Snake plants are really popular again, and they grow by rhizomes, and so you'll get a cluster of leaves coming up and then another cluster, and then you can do the same thing with that. You'll need a good sharp knife because you'll be cutting that thick underground stem apart. But dividing house plants, things like asparagus ferns, Boston ferns, it's a great way, it's called division, it's a great way to divide them in with the aloe vera, with the offsets, just cutting, taking as much of the roots as you can with each little baby. Excellent way to start new plants.
There you go, Jeanette. Thanks so much for calling. Visiting today with Melinda Myers, nationally known gardening expert. She has written over 20 gardening books. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Melinda Myers. Always great to have Melinda come by and talk with us about all kinds of things. We're zeroing in a bit today on the indoor plants, but she can take any of your gardening questions at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Lynn emailed to say she has some spring flowering bulbs, but because she doesn't know where she wants to put them, she doesn't want to plant them. Is there a way to overwinter spring flowering bulbs?
Oh, you bet. And this is a great question, Lynn, especially with the snow and people that may only have a dozen and thinking, I'm not going out there anymore. They need a cold period, 15 weeks of between 35 and 45 degrees, so a couple options. You can plant them in a container filled with potting mix, moistened, put in your refrigerator if you have a spare refrigerator or your family is very tolerant, and give them that chill. I've had good success in my unheated garage. I usually put it in the corner away from the door so it doesn't get that draft. Often set it upon a board or put them in a box filled with insulating material. You know, most of us have something in the garage, a bag of potting mix, something that you could just surround it just to help keep it consistently cold. But it needs that 35 to 45 degrees. You could also pot them up, sink them in the ground, because it's not frozen yet, in a vacant part of your garden. And then in the spring, lift it up, put them on your patio, set them in your window box, enjoy the blooms, or get them in the garden if you decide on the location. But even if you force them, enjoy the flowers and then get them into the garden. I like to plant in spring because if I put them in a cool, dark place for summer, I often forget and don't get them in the ground in the fall. So you can force them to bloom that way and by giving them a chill. Otherwise, pack them in peat moss, put them in a spare refrigerator away from apples and fruit that give off ethylene, so in a spare refrigerator or, again, in an unheated garage. And that way you could just pop the bulbs in. If you know where you're going to put them in the spring, they may be delayed in bloom, but you'll still get flowers, and then they're in place for their future.
There we go. Jim in Appleton has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Jim.
Morning. I wonder if you could just remind me when it's safe to begin pruning the oaks again.
You know, any time that they're totally dormant, so, you know, they found that those picnic beetles that carry the disease from the oak wilt from one to another, that they are still active, but usually the fungus mats aren't. So I would, you know, depending on, we kind of got that cold snap. So anytime they're dormant through about tax day is the conservative, you know, is a conservative that I tend to go with because oaks are too beautiful. So as long as they're dormant, you're good.
There you go, Jim. Thank you for calling. And Abby in Lodi, it's your turn. Hi, Abby.
Hi. I had a big old jade plant that was actually handed down from my mother-in-law, and we replanted it, and it just went downhill when we replanted it. And we can take the little sprouts out and grow them really nicely, but when they get to anywhere above like 12 inches tall, they get a droop, like a all the branches go down instead of branching up. And I didn't know if they're overwatering or what.
And are you talking about, you're talking about a weeping fig, not the edible fig, right?
No, the jade plant.
Jade plant.
Oh, jade. I'm sorry. Ooh, sorry. Time to clean those ears. Sorry.
That's all right.
So the jade plant, you're right to always think watering because they do like to go a bit drier. And so you can start jades, as you found, from a leaf piece. Often, you know, you'll have a leaf drop and all of a sudden you have a little plant growing in your pot, in the pot with the parent plant. So you've taken cuttings, you've started new plants, they start out fine, but then start drooping, or right away they're drooping?
Only when they're much bigger, like when they get to be like 10 or 12 inches high, then they...
Okay, then they start drooping. Have you transplanted it at that pot at that point, or are they in the same size container as when you started them when they were younger?
Well, I would say a lot of times it starts before I transplant them.
Okay, and when you transplant them and you're looking at the roots, I know it's hard to remember. Are they nice and white? Are they dry? And this is just to help everybody. So if your plant's drooping, moisture is usually an issue. Usually we tend to overwater. When you move a plant out of its container, check the roots. If they're slimy and soft, it's probably been exposed to too much water. If they're dry and brittle, probably not enough. And then loosening those roots, because if they're growing in a circle and they're pot-bound, they'll continue to do that unless you loosen them. Not saying you didn't, just helping everyone out here. And then that's a good way to encourage them to explore the surrounding soil. So one is I would just, as they start to droop, you might want to take one out and take a look at the roots, because half of our plants underground, and that's often where the problem starts. Make sure it's not getting, it takes cooler temperatures, but not drafts of cold temperature. In fact, cooler nights will help encourage it to bloom in late winter, early spring. So I would check your watering. I think you're on to it. Avoid fertilizing during the, you know, the winter. So from November to March, most of our houseplants do not need fertilizer unless they're actively growing. And so I think it might just be a matter of moisture and adjusting to that smaller scale plant.
There you go, Abby. Thank you so much for calling. Well, I was thinking about limey, because what I do with limey is I just put some fish emulsion fertilizer, and that's that stinky stuff, but it's all I've ever used. And maybe I should be using something else, but I get a heck of a lot of limes.
Nope.
you're having success, Larry. And one of the benefits of doing a low nitrogen or an organic fertilizer is not only are there low level of nutrients, so you're less likely to push excessive growth. That's more enticing to insects. You'll have more problems with aphids and mites if you have less succulent growth. You're going to push less growth and stress the plant, but you're providing consistent amounts of nutrients, and those organic, like fish emulsion, will also help fix the soil. And if you have healthy soil, you have a healthy plant. I have a question for you. Do you have cats, right? And do they bother with when you're fertilizing with fish emulsion?
They don't, because I have aluminum foil wrinkled up and put in the pot, which I have to take out every time I water. Usually about once a week, but they stay away from the plant.
Okay, well, that's a good strategy. I've used chunk bark. Some people put pepper. I'm not quite that mean. My cats, So I just was curious. I've never used fish emulsion for that reason, because I just had visions of them.
Oh, yeah, the aluminum foil works great plants.
That's a great tip for people who have cats and indoor plants, because you can have both. It's just a little challenging.
Let's go to Richard in St. Charles, Illinois. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I have an oleander plant that is potted. We bring it inside in the cooler weather. It has now gotten to be about 7.5 feet tall.
Wow.
Yeah.
My question is, can I trim it, and can I trim it now? It seems to be starting to bloom again now that it's inside.
Well, I personally would want to enjoy the flowers before I did any pruning.
Me too.
And if you can, I'm one of those people that really prefers to wait till the stress of winter is over, do my pruning. For hibiscus, you want to finish by the end of February if you want summer blooms. For oleander, I'd do the same. So if you can, enjoy the flowers, and then once we get into January and February, if you have space for that 7.5 foot tall plant and room to enjoy it, I would wait and do it, later in winter. And then we're going to be heading into spring, longer days, the plant wounds will close, you'll get quicker regrowth. So if you can wait, I would wait. It won't hurt to do it now, but you'll miss the blooms. And I think doing it late winter just gives you a good timing for plant growth.
Thanks, Richard. Appreciate it. And John in Middleton, your turn. Hi, John.
Hey, I just had a quick question. I have a flowering plum tree, and I'm just wondering, would it be okay to prune it now, or do I need to wait until it gets a little bit colder?
Depends on if I have stuff that still has leaves attached. I would make sure it's good and dormant. You know, we were talking about the oak trees, too, and I've been looking out at the oaks around me, and those have been dropping leaves, but I would make sure it's good and dormant. As long as the leaves have been off for a while, you'd be okay to do your pruning. I like to wait sometimes to do my pruning, again, late winter, early spring. So if we've had winter damage, I take care of it at one time. If the animals come and do a little munching, I can adjust my pruning accordingly. Sometimes at that time of year, I'm anxious to get out and do something on one of those nice days. But anytime during the dormant season is fine. So as long as it's dropped its leaves for, a week or so. I just looked at my yard, and things are just, my apples still have some leaves on them. My peaches are just, some are dropped, some aren't. So just make sure it's good and dormant, and then you can start pruning.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it. Ann in Madison, what's on your mind?
Hi. I just this morning, my jade plant, which is at least a foot tall, and I've been so happy with it. The stem is nice and big and strong, fell over and broke off, and broke off at the bottom with just a little bit of the fine roots with it. And the first thing I did was put it in water to hold on to it until I could figure out what to do. But is there any chance I'll be able to save the whole plant?
Here's what I would do. I'm always like to have a little backup plan. So I would take some cuttings from some of the side shoots and stems, or at least a few leaves, and start a new plant. I would get that out of the water, the big plant out of the water. You could try putting it in a cacti succulent mix. I would put a stake or some method of support.
When you looked at what was in the pot, were the roots rotten? Did you notice anything unusual? You know, I would put it in fresh cacti succulent mix.
I would too.
Something fresh. And a relatively small container, because you hardly have any roots, and a support. But I would take cuttings as well, just in case that parent plant doesn't make it. You've at least got some offspring to get you started again.
That makes a lot of sense. Anne, thank you so much for calling. Melinda, what's your website address again? I'm forgetting here.
It's melindamyers.com. And I just want to put a plug in. I'm going to be at the Museum of Wisconsin Art in West Bend. Very cool arrangements. I was there last night. Cool arrangements that mimic the artwork. I'm talking Bloomin' Indoor Gardens at 2 to 2:45 tomorrow. So if you're in the West Bend area, join me and others. It's a cool exhibit, nice little art museum right on the river in West Bend. Bloomin' Holidays is the event, and great crafters, so you can do some Christmas shopping, talk plants with me, and have a good fun Saturday.
A good fun Saturday. Melinda Myers, our guest today, nationally known gardening expert, TV radio host, author of 20 garden books. It's always great to have her join us for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. Have you with us for another edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today, Melinda Myers, nationally known gardening expert, TV and radio host. She's got a great website, melindamyers.com. She has over 30 years of horticulture experience. She's written over 20 gardening books. And we have open lines, so you can join in with your question or comment at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Melinda, Kim in Cuba City emailed to say she has an American Revolution bittersweet. She wants to cut some of the berries for decorations. How much can she cut off without hurting the plant? It's about 5 feet tall and 5 feet wide.
You know, that's a very vigorous grower. One of the cool things for people that don't know that plant, it was introduced by Bailey's Nursery based out of Minnesota, and you only need one plant to get fruit. In general, bittersweet, you need at least, you know, for every female, you need at least one male. So one male for every five females to get pollination, fertilization, and get the fruit. And the nice thing about Autumn Revolution is you just need one plant. And I've seen pictures of the mature plant, and I have one too, and they're very vigorous. So you could probably prune off a good third and not cause a problem. So, just prune back to a good healthy side shoot above a healthy bud so that you have a nice, good, clean wound to close and heal. But they'll tolerate pretty severe pruning. In fact, once it gets, it's really established, it sounds like now, you may be pruning back severely every year just to keep it in line. So.
And I said American Revolution, but you said it's Autumn Revolution.
I think it's Autumn. You know what? Now I'm wondering if I've got it wrong. So, you know, it's one of those, and I have one in my garden. So it is American bittersweet. It's an American bittersweet, and I think it's Autumn Revolution, but I'm trying to look up really quick. I'm doing a cheat sheet here on my computer to see if it's Autumn Revolution or American Revolution. So it probably is American Revolution. It's Autumn Revolution. It's Autumn Revolution.
Autumn Revolution.
American bittersweet.
There we go. Jude in Iola, let's go to you. Hi.
Hi, Larry. My question is about, I think it's a bamboo plant. It's just a little indoor plant that you start off with just one stalk, and then it grows, and then little ones grow off of it. And for me, mine just keeps growing taller, and it's got its leaves on either side. But I want to know if I can, cut it in half and resprout the other one, because it gets so leggy and it just isn't looking very nice.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned this plant, Jude, because it's so popular. It's called bamboo plant or lucky bamboo, and I'm thinking what you have is really a dracaena, even though that's what they sell it as, the lucky bamboo. Sorry. And the nice part about dracaenas is you can do exactly what you want to do. You can take a cutting. You know, we always want to go bigger because we think then we'll start with a bigger plant. And they're pretty tolerant of that. But if you start with 6 inches, you just have fewer leaves to lose moisture. So you can take a cutting. You can take those side branches. You can reduce the height. What will happen is you'll get two shoots coming from underneath where you make that cut. So you have a double branch. You can also do something fun, probably not needed with yours, but with Diefenbachias or other dracaenas that are getting too big. You can do something called air layering, and this is a fun thing to do. So what you do is let's say your plant's, 4 feet tall, and there are very few leaves on the bottom, and you want to take maybe take the leaves, cover the top 2 feet. So under those leafy canopy, go down, cut the stem halfway, sprinkle in some rooting hormone, wedge it open with a toothpick, a wooden toothpick, and then wrap it in moist sphagnum moss and plastic. And in a couple months, you'll see roots coming through. You'll see it through the plastic. You can cut off beneath that part that has the roots, remove the plastic, and pot it up. So now you have a 2-foot cutting that's already rooted because it was still getting moisture and nutrients from the original root system. Then cut that stem back to just a couple inches above the ground. You'll get new growth coming from that. And so it's a fun way to kind of bring a big plant down to size, and you'll end up with 2 plants that way. So with yours, it sounds small enough that you could just take cuttings, root those. I always root my things in moist potting mix. I tend to be an underwater. Rooting things in water, if you have success and like it, continue. But typically what happens is the roots that form in water are different than those that form in soil. So you're really making the plant root twice. And so just taking your cutting, putting it in a moist, well-drained potting mix, keeping it slightly moist, maybe a baggie, not tight, but just loose around it just to help hold the humidity in, and keep that potting mix moist. It will root, and dracaenas root very easily. So you should have good success starting new plants.
There you go, Jude. Thank you for calling. And Kara in Finland, Minnesota, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a spider plant that my son got from his teacher years ago when he was in third grade, but that doesn't matter. But anyway, we've had it for like 8 years, and then all of a sudden this year, it decided to start getting brown, and the leaves started dying back from the tips back. And the only thing I could find online was that maybe it was a fungus, and that spider plants are really hardy, and nothing much seems to affect them, so the only suggestion I could find was just to repot it with new fresh soil. That was all I could find. I don't know what's going on with it, though, and none of my other plants seem to be bothered at all.
Melinda, what do you think?
Yeah, have you changed water at all? Is this still receiving the same water it had been receiving all along? Have you moved?
No, it's all the same. It's in the same pot, and it has a little stemmy thing that I pour water in that goes right to the bottom, and it seems to prefer it that way, so that's how I always did it, and I haven't done any kind of, like, fertilizer. I've really kind of been doing the neglect mode other than water.
It usually works very well. And the reason I ask, I'm glad you brought this up, Kara. Sorry you're having problems. And those plants are also sentimental, and
yeah.
It's a lot of pressure. Dracaena, spider plants, prayer plants, Thai plants are very sensitive to chlorine and fluoride in the water. And that's why I ask if there was a change in the water. So we often see brown tips on those because those chemicals just tend to burn out the tip. Keeping the soil slightly moist, not overly wet, sometimes will help dilute that so it's less of an issue. If you haven't transplanted recently and the roots are filling the container, so you might want to slide the plant out. So if you water it, say, every 7 days, just for example, day 3, when the soil is still moist, slide it out of the pot and see what's going on. Is it pot bound? Maybe you need to loosen those and put it in a slightly larger container. If the roots are slimy, then cut away those slimy roots, repot it in a container slightly larger. For whatever reason, you know, maybe it just, you know, sometimes as plants grow and change, especially if they're getting pot bound, you know, they're using more water or there's no room to hold the water. So kind of take a look at what's going on underneath the ground. And I think if you trim off anything that's wet and slimy, that will help. I did interior plantscapes early in my career, and everybody would try to help us by watering in between our visits, which was the right, you know. Oh, I helped you, Melinda. We watered these plants, and there'd be water sitting in the pot. And once I retrained them to not help me, and we eliminated that, I was able to bring plants back that had leaf spot disease or other problems by just correcting the watering. So I would check the roots and adjust your watering if you need to. It, you know, it may need to be a little more often because there's no extra soil. It may be staying too wet. You'll be able to see when you look at the potting mix and how it's drying out and if it's staying too wet or getting too dry. But I wouldn't give up. I think it's just maybe outgrown its container, and you may need to either repot it and or adjust your watering. But the good news is they're pretty resilient, and like you read, they're tough plants, meaning they take a lot of abuse and don't have a lot of problems.
There you go. I was thinking about Limey as you were talking. When I first got Limey, I put it in a pot, and I didn't put enough soil in the pot. Well,
okay.
it was about halfway down the pot. But it lived, and it did fine. And after a couple of years, I didn't change pots. I just moved Limey up in the same pot.
You know, and that's a great suggestion. And often potting mix settles anyway. You know, use that light, airy soil, and then all of a sudden, like you said, your plant's down a couple of inches. And then lifting it out and putting fresh soil on the bottom is a perfect way to repot without going to a bigger container. So good suggestion, Larry.
Let's go to Betty in Madison next. Hi, Betty.
Hi. I have a question on orchids, and it's kind of a twofold one. I have two orchids, and I'm not good with them. Somehow I know they're supposed to be easy, and this is the easiest one. But one of them has started to get yellow at the base of the leaf, and then the leaf falls off. The other one's doing okay.
You know, I just watched and you know what, when people tell you plants are easy, you always need to be skeptical.
Yeah.
Orchids are beautiful. They're long-lived bouquets, and the prices are unbelievable. I just watched a YouTube video from the Chicago Botanic Garden on repotting orchids. And what I liked about it is, it was one of, I think she was doing an internship, or she worked there, and she's a member of the Orchid Society, but she walked you through the process. And one of the things she talked about was orchids contain sphagnum moss, and when we buy them, they're often packed tight in sphagnum moss, and that really holds the moisture. You need some of that because most orchid mixes are some chunk bark, you know, fir bark, some perlite for drainage, the white things that, you know, crunch under your fingers that add drainage, and then some sphagnum moss to hold the moisture. But often the ones we buy are really crammed full of sphagnum moss.
Yep.
And so if there's too much, it's going to get too wet. And it might be that the one that's turning yellow for some reason got a little more sphagnum moss packed into that pot than the one that's not. And you may either need to adjust your watering or repot it. And she goes through the process. So if you're a little nervous, because they're orchids, and, you know, peeling back that sphagnum moss, she goes through, she just did a really nice job of explaining it and showing the different parts and how to know when the roots are healthy or not. So I would start by adjusting the watering. If that doesn't work, then I would just lift it out of the pot, check that if you have access to the internet, and then just start opening that up and removing some of that sphagnum and repotting it, and that probably will help a lot.
There you go, Betty. Thanks so much. Yellowing leaves this time of the year, it's almost, the first thing I always think about is too much water.
You're right. And the other thing is anything that was outside that you brought in, yellow leaves and dropping leaves, because those leaves outside block some of the sunlight because they had plenty of sunlight. So then we bring them inside, less intense light, the days are shorter, more gray. And so then they shed those sun-loving light for more shade sun-loving leaves for the shade leaves that are wider. The cells are arranged to absorb more light. So things that you're moving inside, always check watering, but also be aware that they can drop the leaves, like weeping figs. change in light outside, even if the plant's been inside all year, often they'll shed their leaves because it's less light intense. And so then they can drop up to 95% and put out new leaves. So don't give up, and then be aware. So always, you're right, Larry, watering too much, not enough, usually too much, and fertilizing too much and not enough can be yellow leaves. This time of year, cut back on the fertilizing. The conditions aren't great. So unless your plant is actively growing, or you know that's the problem, go light on the fertilizer, like the fish emulsion or another organic or a low nitrogen. A little bit, you can always add more. You can't take it away.
That's a great explanation, by the way, on the leaves. That was good. I haven't heard it explained so well before.
I spent a lot of time sweeping up yellow leaves in my house as I bring all plants inside for winter.
Well, let's go to Patrick in Madison, see what's on Patrick's mind. Hi there.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Great.
Great. Thanks, Patrick.
I had called a year ago because I was a first-time garlic grower, and I put in some red German and asked you for some advice, and you said that you had never grown that before and to call you back and let you know what happened.
Okay.
It was the first time I ever grew garlic. It was so easy. 100% of the bulbs formed. I had to put down some chicken wire in the early spring to keep the squirrels from digging them up. The bulbs were kind of small, but from the farmers markets I went to, everybody had that problem with this type of garlic this year, but they were incredibly flavorful and really juicy, and I put 47 more of them in the ground this fall.
Excellent. Thank you so much. You know what, Patrick, I got my garlic in a little later than I wanted. But I'm going to have to add red German garlic to my list for next year. So thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
I really, you know what, this is the best part about what I get to do, and maybe you feel the same way, Larry, is everybody shares.
Yeah.
And you always learn something new every time I go out and speak or do radio with you, or, you know, it's the best. I have the best gig, let me tell you. Maybe next to you.
Patrick, thanks so much for calling. Red German garlic, keep that on the list.
I'm writing it down right now so I remember.
Well, let's take another call here. And Janet in Marshfield, we'll go to you. Hi, Janet.
Hi. A question I have is I have five shamrock plants, and they spent last summer outside. But they've been outside since, but they have, when their leaves first come out of the ground, they look perfectly fine. But by the time they're full to the regular height, they look like they have mildew, like the peonies did. But they weren't getting close to peonies anyway, so I was just wondering if it's possible that's what they have, or if there's some treatment I should do, because it's been going on quite a long time.
Yeah, could you repeat? I'm sorry, I couldn't quite hear what plant you had. You have five of, I didn't
shamrock.
Know what kind of plant.
Shamrock.
Yeah. Okay, so you're growing them outside in the summer, bringing them in, then they, I'm assuming.
Right. I had them outside in their pots last summer, because they didn't have room for them in the house, but they haven't been out since then, but they still keep coming up with, the leaves will look fine, and then they turn this all whitish.
Kind of,
it's like powdery mildew on the leaves, and then the leaves gradually crumble up.
Thank you for repeating. Sorry, I had trouble hearing you for some reason. So powdery mildew, we do see that on a variety of plants, and I am kind of infringing on Dr. Brian Huddleston of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, so Brian, bear with me. But powdery mildew, there are different strains that attack different plants, and we do see it on indoor plants, begonias sometimes. I haven't seen it on shamrock plant, but I wouldn't be surprised. Sometimes with begonias, what we see is we put our plants close together. One of the benefits is by grouping them together, when one transpires or loses moisture from the leaves, it increases the humidity around its neighboring plants, so that's great. But begonias do need some air circulation, and they are susceptible to things like botrytis bite and powdery mildew. And even African violets, I've seen some mildew issues when they're put in too close and the air circulation is poor. I haven't seen it on shamrock plants, but, you know, it is possible.
So what I would suggest is make sure they're getting good airflow, put them in an area maybe where it's not as stagnant, and avoid water on the leaves, even though that's not what causes mildew, but that's always a good strategy. And, there aren't a lot of fungicides for indoor plants. Plus, you probably don't want to be spraying neem, N-E-E-M as in Mary, is an organic, and one formulation is good for fungal disease control. And horticulture oils are labeled for houseplants, like year-round spray oil you can use on houseplants, and that will help with powdery mildew if that, in fact, is the problem. So read and follow label directions so you don't damage the plant. You want to make sure you use the right rate. So yeah, that might be an option if it truly is.
Good luck, Jana. Thanks so much for calling. Christina in Glenwood City, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. I've got two questions. I have a rubber tree and an umbrella tree. They are both 28 years old, and they are very pot-bound right now. I mean, to the point where the only thing I can figure out is I'd have to break the pots to get them out. So my first question is, have you got suggestions about how to get them out of the pot without breaking them?
Yeah, so one of the things you might want to try to do if you've got access to a good long, sharp knife to just run it around the inside of the pot to see if that would help, you know, loosen it up. You're probably going to need some help in turning it on its side. I'm guessing it's probably a terracotta or a glaze pot, not a plastic pot that you could apply pressure to. Is that right?
Correct, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anything you could do to try to loosen those roots around the edge. The other thing is, if you can tip it over, I've often had luck pushing on the drainage holes. You know, get something that can help give me a little bit, you know, cut around the edges, lay it on its side the best you can with a rubber tree. That's going to be challenging. And then pushing from the bottom through the drainage holes, I would give that a try. You have nothing to lose. And then the other thing with large plants, it's always taking a chance, but if you can't find a bigger plant because you've maxed out the pot sizes available, well, there are always bigger ones, but ones that you can manage, sometimes doing a little root pruning, take an inch off the outer edge, and then just put fresh soil in there, and you could leave it in the same size container. It's obviously stressful on the plant because you're removing some of the roots. That's not your first option, but if going bigger is not an option, you know, not possible because you can't manage it, that's another way to help the roots have more room by doing a little bit of root pruning.
I use one of those long-bladed bread blades, you know, those slicing.
Oh.
That works pretty well, actually, if you need to do that.
Right.
It
so if you're at Larry's house, think twice before you have a slice of bread.
And on that note, we are out of time. Oh, Melinda, the time flies when you're on the air with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Always fun, Larry. Thanks.
And don't forget, Melinda is going to be in West Bend tomorrow for Bloomin' Holidays in West Bend. So go to MelindaMyers.com. You'll find out some more information about that and a whole lot more. Melinda Myers, our guest. Always fun to have her with us. Well, Monday we'll speak to New York Times bestselling author Mary McNear about the latest novel set in her Butternut Lake series. And then at 11:45, Philippe Cocard will be back to talk about this year's grape crop and talk about wines with us as well. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.